Welcome to the last offering on the ongoing series on the 13 Ikrim, the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim. Unfortunately, our shiur last Monday was cancelled for some reason, which I don't remember exactly why. But I was intending to give you the second half of the Mashiach shiur in order to give you a complete picture of the Yud Gimel Ikrim as much as we can. I'm not going to give you the second half of that shiur. I hope at some stage to give the second half of that share somewhere, and therefore I will post it and you'll be able to hear it. But we got most of the main ideas out of Mashiach last week, or 2 weeks ago. Let's have a look at Tchiyas HaMeisim. There's a lot to talk about. This is, as I said, the 13th, the last of the Ikrim, and I want to bring out some really critical points here. First of all, we see various different hints in the Psukim, in the verses of the Torah, to the idea that the dead will somehow live on in some guise or another. Have a look at the first three psukim that I want to bring you. Number one, from Devarim. Ru'u ata, ki ani. See, says God, it is me, ani hu, ve'ein elokim Elohim imadi. There is no other God with me. Ani amis, I kill, or I cause to die. Ve'achayeh, and I bring back to life, or I sustain. Machatzi ve'ani erpa, I squash and I heal. Ve'ein miyadi Matzil, and no one can save but me. This is a psukim from Parshat Ha'azinu, and from the words here, ani amit the achayeh, I kill and bring back to life, they want to see a remez to Tchiyas HaMeisim. Of course, on the pshat level, ani amit the achayeh means I sustain, I give life rather than I bring the dead back to life, but they want to see a hint there. The Meforshim, on a drash level, the rabbis, on a drash level, when they're looking not just at the contextual, plain meaning of the Pasuk, but they're looking for hints and remazim of different kinds, so this is one of them that they bring out. Okay, the idea of Ani Amit Va'achaya. Number two, a Pasuk in Kohelet, V'yashov ha'afar al ha'aretz, the dust will return to the ground, Keshehaya, whence it came, V'haruach, and the spirit, Tashuv el Elokim Asher Netana, the spirit will return to God who gave it. Now, of course, that is talking about the spirit reconnecting with the source when a person dies. That's not necessarily talking about Tchiyas HaMeisim. And one of the distinctions we're going to have to really try and break today is, what is Tchiyas HaMeisim? Literally, the word Tchiyas HaMeisim, what does it mean? Right, the making living, or the causing to live of the dead. Now, there are two different ways you could understand the word Tchiyas HaMeisim. The classic way we always use it means dead people physically coming back to life. Okay? However, it could mean, in terms of the word, immortality. The ongoing life of the soul after death. Life after death. Okay? When I say the word life after death to you, you don't normally think of dead people coming back to life, do you?
No.
You think of the soul continuing to live in some existence. The question is, what do we mean, or what did the classic Meforshim mean, and most importantly, what did the Rambam mean when he said the word Tchiyas HaMeisim? Did he mean the dead will physically re-exist, or did he mean that the soul lives on after death? Because they're very important distinctions. They're two very different things. Yes, Rivka.
Someone is suffering an accident and considered dead, and the person comes back to life.
Right. So we don't normally call CPR and resuscitation techniques. We don't normally call them resurrection, Tchiyas HaMeisim, because reincarnation, resurrection. So we'll see. Reincarnation means the idea that the soul comes back in different bodies and in different existences before it's finished its circuit. Resurrection means that the physical body comes back to life. We'll talk about that. I think from a medical perspective, as long as we are capable of bringing people back to life from whatever medical state they're in, we call that Hatzalas Nefoshes. We call that saving life rather than Tchiyas HaMeisim. Yeah? So giving people CPR doesn't mean you're performing Tchiyas HaMeisim. Although there is a debate about that. You know, at what point do you define halachic death? Is halachic death when the heart stops beating? Well, today, we can take people whose heart has stopped beating for quite some time, and we can restart the heart, and we can bring back the person, etc. I'm not going to get into a debate about that. We talked about it when we did organ donation, but that's not for now. Number three, the pasuk in Daniel, the book of Daniel, is more of a direct reference to physical resurrection. Look at number three. For Rabbi Yisheni Ad Masafar, many of those who dwell in the earth, Yakitsu will wake up. That sounds like people who are dead coming back to life. Eile lechai olam, some for eternal life. Eile lecharafos ledirion olam, some for eternal embarrassments and judgments, if you like. And therefore, the idea in Daniel of there being a resurrection for judgment day is a Jewish idea. Somehow there'll be the body and the soul will be reconnected, some for eternal life, and some for eternal, if you like, judgments and damnation, or whatever, that sounds like a terribly Christian word, but I just want you to see the sources in the psukim. It's not just ideas coming out of a vacuum, it's ideas coming out of the sources themselves. Now, I want to go quite fast here because there's a lot to say. The Rambam, in the Mishnah, in the commentary on the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, here says, Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek li'olam haba, or rather the Mishnah itself, sorry, says, Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek li'olam haba, all the Jews have a place in the world to come. Shine'emar, v'amcha kulam tzadikim, v'abe kulam tzadikim le'olam yushu aretz, your people are all tzadikim, they will inherit the land. What does the land mean? It means olam haba. V'eilu she'eilahem chelek li'olam haba, the following people have no place in the world to come. Says the source here, ha'oimer, someone who says, ein tchiyat ha'meisim min ha'tera. There is no tchiyat ha'meisim min ha'tera. And therefore we see clearly, and this is the source of the Rambam, whoever denies tchiyat ha'meisim has no place in Olam Haba. Chazal say that clearly. And therefore that's where he gets the idea that this is one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Again, that doesn't define for us yet exactly what tchiyat ha'meisim is. Again, is it physical resurrection or is it immortality of the soul? But whatever it is, if you deny it, you have no place in the world to come. Yes?
Are all the Yud Gimel Ikrim defined by whether or not we will get a place?
Absolutely. That defines the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Absolutely. Look at the Shiras at Shirim. At the beginning of the year, we talked about that then. Now, this notion of the world to come can mean different things. I brought you a line from Tefillah. We say this on Shabbat morning. Look at number 5. No one has your value in this world, God. No one is like you, our King, in the world to come. There is nothing like you, our Redeemer, in the days of Mashiach. And nobody is similar to you, our Savior, in Tchiyat HaMeisim. Now, four expressions talking about Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, Yemos HaMashiach, and Tchiyat HaMeisim. It's tempting to see these as a chronological progression. There's Olam Hazeh, then there's Olam Haba, after you die, and wherever the soul goes. Then there's Yemos HaMashiach, and then there's Tchiyat HaMeisim, at the end of Yemos HaMashiach. We'll see, it's not so straightforward, and I will present you with different models of how we understand this whole process. But just from this line alone, in the Tefillah, it would seem that way. Now, have a look at the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. We've seen this source before. I'm really aiming for the comments of the Ravid at the end, who is the one that takes issue with the Rambam. Number 6. Olam Haba. Ein lo guf v'gviya. I'm going to go through this quickly because we've had it before. In the world to come, there is no physical body. Ela nefashos ha-tzadikim bilvad. There's just the souls of the righteous. The word tzadik doesn't mean the totally righteous. It means those people who are more righteous than evil. Okay, it's the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah goes through a whole analysis of who is a tzaddik and who is a rasha. It's not an all or nothing game. It's a majority analysis, but I'm not getting into that now. Beloy guf kamalchei asharis, without a body like the malachim. Hoyl be'ein lo boi kviyot, since there is no physicality, ein bo lo yachila, lo yishtia, there's no eating and drinking, lo yidava mikol ha-dvarim shigufas b'nei adus shrichim ehem bo'olam hazeh, none of the things that we need in this body, bodily world, in this physical world. Ela tzadikim yoshim v'atrasein b'rasheim, but rather the tzadikim sit with their crowns on their heads, b'nerim is v'ashchina, they bask in the radiance of the shchina, they connect with the source, it's completely spiritual, it's non-physical. When they said that we sit, they said the tzaddikim sit, it's just a moshel, it's a parable. Kolome means the tzaddikim mitzuyim sham b'loy amol v'lagvi yagia, they're there without effort, without work. When it says the crowns are on their heads, what does it mean? That their knowledge is with them. This is their crown and glory. Fine. I did that quickly because we had that source. Remember that source before? We had it, I promise you. Now, the Rambam therefore says Olam Haba has no physical existence. Comes in the Ravid and says the following. Hasagas HaRavid. Now the Ravid was more Kabbalistic. He was a contemporary, an older contemporary of the Rambam, and he wrote a commentary on the Rambam. He generally says nothing, which means he agrees with what Rambam says. And occasionally he comes in with a very forceful disagreement. Sometimes very forceful. And here's one of the interesting examples where he comes in and says, no way, Jose. Look at the Ravad in the Rashi script. Amar Avram, Aleph Aleph, Amar Avram, his name is Avram. This is what he says. Divrei ha'ish hazeh, the words of this man, Be'enai, in my eyes, Karovim, are getting close, L'misha oimer ein tchias ha'mesim legufos, to someone who denies physical resurrection. Elon and Shamas Bilvad, it says that they only believe in life after death, but they don't believe in resurrection. V'chai roshim, by my own life, Loi hayah das chazal, this was not the view of the rabbis, Azesh Azeh on this particular issue. Shehari Amru Ksuvas, because they said in Ksuvas, Hasidim Tzadikim Shiamdu Bilvusheim, the Tzadikim will rise in the future and in their clothes. But you have Taurus Kamashmada. When he says they're crowns, he means they're crowns, literally. Ukapshutan, and just as the words in their straightforward meaning, Veloyia Mashal, this is not a parable. It means that the dead will rise and they will wear clothes. There's even a halachic debate, are you allowed to bury a dead Jew in tachrichim, in shrouds, which are made of shatnas? Interesting halachic question. Because if you say they're going to come back to life and they're going to come back and they're going to rise up somehow in their clothes, so they can't, the first thing they're going to do when they come back to life is wear shatnas. That's not very nice. Unless you say that when they come back to life there will be no mitzvah of shatnas, because the mitzvahs will change. Then this is the beginning of an entire debate on this issue. But that's a separate issue. I'm not getting into that now, where the mitzvahs change in the world to come. That's not now. Here, the Ravid comes in and says he feels the Rambam is getting close. He's sailing close to the wind, because there were groups of people who denied physical resurrection, and he says the Rambam sounds like he's part of that group. And this was part of a story where the Rambam was accused in his life of a number of quote-unquote heretical things, and one of the things he was accused of is not believing in the physical resurrection. Yes? Okay. What's the Rivet's problem then?
Yeah.
The very fact that you're asking that question is a good question. The Rivet obviously understands that the Rambam is talking about a sort of global Olam Haba. And it's interesting because the words Olam Haba are sometimes used to talk about the soul world, like the Rambam is using them here. But sometimes people use the word Olam Haba to mean the future world, the world to come, Yemos HaMashiach, etc., etc. The Rambam clearly understands here that the Rambam's Olam Haba means what's coming in the future, not just what's happening in the soul world.
Do we know what that means?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll get that. Let's go on. Halakha number 7. The Rambam paskens this Mishnah, which he said that you have to have to have a place in the world. You have to believe in the Tchias HaMesim. He says the Elohim she'elhem chelik li'olam haba. The following people have no place in the world to come. Ela nichrosim ve'oyvdim v'nidonim al goydel risham. But they are judged forever for their wickedness. V'chatasam li'olam li'yom yolamim, and their sin goes forever and ever. Who are those people? Hakoferim b'tchias HaMesim u'b'vias HaGoyel. People who deny Tchias HaMesim and bias HaGoyel. Now, what's Tchias HaMesim?
Resurrection.
Right. What's Bias HaGoel? Mashiach. The coming of the Redeemer. Now, the Rambam seems fairly clear. No? He says, if you don't believe in Tchias HaMesim, you have no place in the world to come. So what's the Rivet's problem? The Rivet over here on the other source said, and this is, they're both in Hilchos Tshuva. Yeah, the Rivet knew this source number 7 just as well as we do. Why is he worried that the Rambam is on thin ice? Why is he worried that the Rambam doesn't believe in physical resurrection? Didn't he just say? It must be that the Rivet doesn't think the Rambam necessarily means physical resurrection. Again, the question is always going to rest above the Rambam's head. What does Tchias HaMesim mean? Does it mean physical resurrection, or does it mean life after death? And in fact, in many ways, you could read this source and actually draw an inference that he means life after death, not physical resurrection. Why? Look at the order. Someone who doesn't believe in Tchias HaMesim and the coming of Mashiach. If I ask you to put Tchias HaMesim and the coming of Mashiach, which order would you put them in?
Coming of Mashiach.
You'd normally say the coming of Mashiach and the Tchias HaMesim. So the Rambam says Tchias HaMesim and the coming of Mashiach. What does he mean by that? Does he mean dying? Or does he mean... So it's not clear. And therefore, we have the beginning of a major debate. And by the way, if you were living at the time of the Rambam, this was big politics. People got very upset about this, and we'll see some of that coming up soon. Now, in the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam says zilch about Tchiyas HaMetim physically, which is also interesting. Why doesn't he debate it there or discuss it there as being one of the fundamental principles? That also counted against him. People didn't like the fact that he missed it out. Earlier in life, when he talks about in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, he does mention it, but very briefly. Look at number 8. Do you remember we read each time with Yud Gimel Ikrim, we've read the 10th Yesod, the 11th Yesod, and we've gone through it. Look what he writes on the 13th, number 8. Hayesod HaShlosh Asar, the 13th Yesod, Tchiyas HaMesim, Ukfar Biarnu. You've already explained it. Two words. Kfar Biarnu, we've already explained it. Think about how much he said about the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. We had a 5-page essay from the Rambam on the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Tchiyas HaMesim, we've already explained it. Where have we already explained it? Well, earlier on in that introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, he does talk about Tchiyas HaMesim. And this is what he's quite referring to. Look at number 9. Yesod mi Yesodus Torahs Moshe. One of the most important Yesodus principles of the Torah of Moshe is aimed at the loydvekas bedat Yehudit lemisha lo yamin bezeh. And there is no religion, and there is no connection with religion, of the Jewish religion, for someone who doesn't believe in this. Now, that's very strong words. Very strong words. This is fundamental. You have no connection with Judaism unless you believe in this. Which is what? Okay, this Tchiyas HaMesim idea. Aval hi letzadikim, this is only for the tzadikim. The Loshon Breishis Rabbah, and the language of Breishis Rabbah, the Midrash, is Gvuras Kesham and the Tzadikim and the Rishayim. The rain cycle is for the Tzadikim and the Rishayim, both the wicked and the righteous benefit from the rain. But Tchiyas HaMesim le Tzadikim Bilvad is only for the Tzadikim. Why has the rain got to do with Tchiyas HaMesim? So if you think about it, we make very strong connections between the rain and Tchiyas HaMesim. In the Brocha of Mechaye Mesim, the second bracha of the Shemona Esrei, that bracha is where we say Mashif HaRuach for Morit HaGashem, where we praise God for the rain. Why? What's the connection?
It's like reviving with water.
What is the rain cycle? What is the hydrological cycle? Think of how it works. The rain comes down. It spends however long it spends in the seas. And then the heat comes out. The rain rises back up to the heavens, flows through the rivers, whatever, into the sea, rises back to the heavens, and then flows over and then falls down somewhere else, and the whole thing goes again. It's a cycle. The rain cycle is a cycle, and therefore Chazal saw a parallel to the idea of the Neshama. You know, the Neshama descending into this world and interacting with this world and then being brought back up to Shamayim and then coming, whatever. So the Rambam clearly says that there is such a thing as Tchiyas HaMesim. The Ein Hichyu Arishayim, the Rishayim will not come back to life. The Heimesim Afilu Bechayayim, surely even when they're alive, they're called dead. And then he brings a Medrash that says the wicked, even when they're alive, are really called dead. All the more so when they're dead, they're called dead. They're not going to come back to life, etc. Now, let me ask you a question. The Rambam is describing something which he says is the most fundamental Yesod of Judaism, and there is no Jewish religion without it. If I ask you a question, what is more fundamental to the whole concept of Judaism, the idea of physical resurrection or the idea of life after death?
After death.
Right. If you detach physical resurrection from Judaism as an idea, do you destroy Judaism? Doesn't sound like it. But if you deny the whole concept of any existence after you die, you just ripped the entire heart out of the, you know, Olam Haba, Schar Va'Oinesh, etc., etc., etc. So what the Rambam says in number 9 does not convince anybody that he means physical resurrection, because it's not clear what he means. Again, we're in this limbo with the Rambam. And there were many in his life, as I said, who got upset with him and who started a campaign in many ways against him on this basis. We'll talk more about them in a minute. And they brought proofs from Chazal, where Chazal clearly talk about physical resurrection. Have a look at source number 10, please. Source number 10 is a very famous source, the Gemara from Sanhedrin. Somebody read this in English. I brought number 10 in English as well, so that you could share the burden with me a little bit. It's in small font, but you should have good eyes at your age. So, Alison, are you reading for us? This is a very famous Gemara. Antoninus, an illustrious name, if I say so myself.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Antoninus was a Roman general, leader, whatever, who had a close, personal, and friendly relationship with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who put together the Mishnah. Carry on.
The body and soul can both free themselves from judgment. How? The body can claim, well, the soul that sins from the day it left me, I've been lying tired as a stone in the grave. The soul can say, well, the body that sins, from the day it left me, I've been flying in the air like a bird.
In other words, both of them can blame the other. They can both play the blame game. It's not my fault, it's the other guy's fault. So why are you judging me?
He replied, I will tell you a parable. To what can this be compared? To a human king who owns a beautiful orchard which contains splendid figs. He appointed two watchmen for it, one lame and the other blind. The lame man said to the blind man, I see beautiful figs in the orchard. Come and put me on your shoulders so that we can get them and eat them. The lame man rode on the blind man, so they got them and ate them. Sometime later, the owner of the orchard came and asked them, where are the beautiful figs? The lame man said, do I have legs to walk with? The blind man said, do I have eyes to see? What did he do? He placed the lame man on the blind man and judged them together. So too, Hashem brings the soul and throws it into the body and judges them together. As it says, shall call to the heavens from above and the earth so that he may judge his people. Shall call to the heavens from above, this refers to the soul, and to the earth that he may judge his people to the body.
This is very explicit, very clear, there's no doubt about it, the idea that the soul and the body at some stage in the future have to be reunited, because only together do they make the human. A human being is a unique combination of soul and body. Animals are just body, malachim are just soul, if you like. Human beings are both soul and body. The lame man is the parable to the soul. In other words, it has sight, but it cannot physically move. The blind man has legs, but he has no sight. Put them together, you end up with a human being. So people turned to the Rambam and said, why aren't you being more clear? Chazal, like the Rambam said, were very clear. They couldn't have made it more clear that there's such a thing as a physical resurrection. So why, Rambam, are you not expressing it in quite as clear a way as you could? And indeed, there were some, and in particular, go to page 3, there was a famous Rav at the time of the Rambam called the Ramah, not to be confused with the Ramah. The Ramah of Moshe Isserlitz was later, 400 years later in Poland. Here we're talking, 300 years later, here we're talking about, Rav Meir ben Todros Alevi Abu Lafia, Rav Meir Abu Lafia, who lived at the time, and he was very critical of the Rambam. And he said he was shocked at the idea that the Rambam didn't believe in physical tchias amesim, to the point that at the very end of his life, the Rambam had to write, if you like, a postscript to the Morin Nevuchim, which was called the Maima Tchias Hamesim, the essay on tchias amesim, where the Rambam himself had to write a justification of his own position, because he was being very heavily criticized publicly, even though he was the Rambam, but he had to defend his position. And I brought you a couple of quotes from the Maamar Tchias HaMeisim. Look in number 11, he says like this. Someone else read for us. Yeah? Yes, please, Amy.
And I will state that the resurrection of the dead, which is widely known and recognized among our people, which is accepted by all groups among us, which is mentioned on numerous occasions in the Tfilot, Agadata, and supplications that were composed by the prophets in the great sages, who fill the pages of the Talmud and the Midrashim, refers to the return of the soul to the body after it has departed. Concerning this, there has never been heard any disagreement in our nation, nor does it have any allegorical interpretation other than its literal meaning. Nor is it permissible to rely upon any individual who believes otherwise. In conclusion, we have been informed prophetically concerning Tchias HaMeisim, whether on one or on many occasions, and it has been mentioned countless times by sages of Israel, both of earlier and of recent times, and it has become widely publicized in our nation, and there is universal consensus that the human soul will return to the body, and this is the proper approach to concerning the resurrection of the dead.
Clear? Clear. Sounds very clear. And yet there are still people who read that and said, well, that's what he said, but that's not what the inner esoteric meaning is. He doesn't really mean that, whatever. But this was enough to satisfy people, his critics at the time. He's put his clear understanding on the table, and Why didn't he say that earlier?
Yeah.
We'll get to that right now. In fact, that's number 14. He then has to justify why he's put so much emphasis on the soul world and so little emphasis on physical resurrection to the point that he was accused of not believing in it. So look at number 14. I explained that this is a continuation of the same thing. I explained that we find men concerned only with the resurrection, asking if the dead will rise naked or in their garments or other such problems. In other words, he said, it irritates me. This was in the 12th century, and it's not much different today. That people get so excited about Tchias HaMeisim. They ask all these technical questions like, you know, will you be married to this husband or that husband? And what will you come back with your clothes on or without your clothes on? Or will you be a baby? Will you be a young man? Will you be an old woman? You know, he said, people spend a lot of time talking about this. But the world to come is entirely overlooked. I thereupon announced very clearly that the resurrection is a fundamental of the Torah of Moses our master, but it was not the ultimate goal. And that the ultimate goal is life in the world to come. I engaged in this long discussion so that I dispelled the serious skepticism that contends that the Torah knows of no reward that is, reward that is not in this world, and that it makes no mention of reward or punishment in the afterlife. In other words, the Rambam said, I was forced to put emphasis on the idea of the spiritual soul world, because I live in a world where people don't think about that, where people almost deny that, and therefore I went the other extreme to make sure that people should realize that even if there is physical resurrection, that's not the ultimate goal. That's not the ultimate goal. Now, who is he fighting against? He's fighting against the beginnings of a whole, if you like, proto-Kabbalistic, it was Kabbalistic. Because there were Kabbalists at the time of the Rambam. But it really sort of blossomed after the Rambam in many ways. But there is a whole theme within Judaism that actually the ultimate goal is not the soul world. And the Rambam felt the need to campaign against this. Now the Rambam is coming from also from an Aristotelian place, where this world of the souls is critical. Whereas many of the people around him were coming from a much more, if you like, touchy-feely place, where the aim was to return to the Gan Eden existence. What is the Gan Eden existence of Adam and Chava, where they are physical body and soul together? So many people felt that this was what Mashiach and ultimately Tchias HaMeisim was all about. Have a look at source number 15. Source number 15 is very important. It's the Ramban, Nachmanides. Nachmanides takes a clear view, and he talks about the Rambam. Here, look in his Sefer Torah HaAdam. He says the following: Hine Arichas HaRav, the lengthy comments of the Rav. Here, the Rav means the Rambam. Okay. V'harbusa dvarim lahachriya shebnei olam haba einam gof. Why does the Rambam go on so much about the fact that people in the next world don't have a body? L'shnei inyanim. So there are two reasons why the Rambam goes on about this. Ki hu yodea, he knows full well, she anshe kabbalasenu, that the men of our tradition, the Kabbalistic tradition, yaminu, we believe, she ein achrei tchias hameisim, that there is nothing after tchias hameisim. Tchias hameisim is the final act. That's it. There's nothing after that. That's eternal tchias hameisim. Al pimashi darshu, because they learnt it out from a verse, the bala hamavis lenetzach, that the death will be abolished forever. We say it's possible when we leave a graveyard. Okay, Bala Mavis and Netzach. The Amr Sanhedrin, it says in Sanhedrin, Mesim Shasid Akosh Baruch Halachios, the dead that God brings back to life, Shuv Einam Chosrim Lafram, will never go back to being dead again. Chazal say, that's it, once you're back to life forever. Ulezer Das B'nei Olam Haba, according to this view, the people in the next world, after Tchias HaMeisim, Yichyu Ba'olam Hahu B'Kufasam, will live in the physical world forever. The Harav Zal, but the Rambam says, Mevatel Zehadas, he dismisses this view, B'chol Yichalto, with all his ability, with all his strength, Va'al Zechalko Alav, and that's why so many people disagree with him, Rabin, Mechachme Adoris Ha'elu, Al Kavana Hazois Kemoshe Yimsa B'divrei. He's trying to explain a little bit the background to this massive political, theological debate that happened at the time of the Rambam. Not really political, but theological debate. Which is that the Ramban and the Kabbalists take the view that the ultimate goal is Tchias HaMeisim, and then you go on forever in a world of body and soul together, whereas the Rambam takes the view that Tchias HaMeisim will happen, but then after people come back to life, they will die again. What's therefore the purpose, according to the Rambam, of Tchiyas HaMesim? If you're going to come back to life only to die again, what's the purpose?
To be judged.
Well, the Rambam really holds that the ultimate judgment is in Olam Haba, in the soul world. You may have missed Mashiach. You may be before Mashiach. Well, see, soon the Rambam says it can happen before Mashiach. But maybe to see Mashiach. But what's the purpose of seeing Mashiach? Take it to the next step. For the Rambam, what's the purpose of being there at the time of Mashiach? What's the purpose of Mashiach for the Rambam? In fact, this is the second half of the share that we didn't have last week. What is the purpose of Mashiach? No, that's just one of the things he does in order to achieve that purpose. What is the purpose?
To bring us back to like it was during the days of Gan Eden.
And don't you know the days of? Of what would you say? Gan Eden, no. To fix the world.
To bring us back to
this is very beautiful.
Right. In other words, it's very straightforward, says the Rambam. The purpose of Mashiach is to do mitzvahs. That's the purpose of Mashiach. How's that different from today? The answer is, today we can do mitzvahs, but look at all the things that are distracting us. Look at all the hatred in the world. Look at all the weapons in the world. Look at all the war in the world. And people can't do mitzvahs when they're on the run and they're being chased, etc. Mashiach is an experience which releases us from all of the worldly impediments that stop us from connecting with God and allow us to connect with God. Therefore, why do the dead come back to life?
To do mitzvahs.
To get another chance of doing mitzvahs. If you were to go to the graveyard and say to the people in the graveyard, who here wants to come back to life just for a day? Just for a day, and then you'll have to die again. Do you think people will take you up on that? I suspect so. A day, what would you do with a day if you had a day? If you were dead and then you had a day when you weren't dead? How would you even, you have enough time, every second you'd be doing something. So the Rambam says the purpose of Tchiyas HaMesim is very practical. It's not the ultimate goal. It's just like a massive chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, because you can't do mitzvahs in Olam Haba. You're stuck. You're flatlined. Spiritually. There's nothing you can do. In this world, you can push yourself up a level so that with your day of Torah mitzvahs, or a year, or 10 years, or 100 years, whatever it is, you'll then end up back much more connected with God. Yeah.
That doesn't make sense, because if you're saying only people who are going to come back are the Sadiqim, who are righteous and have already performed mitzvot, then why would they need to be the group that comes back to do the mitzvot?
Okay, so again, that goes back to what I said before. The tzaddik doesn't mean the person who is perfect. The tzaddik means the person who is on balance, good enough to be able to get that existence of Olam Haba in the first place. You only need to be 50.01% to be a tzaddik. You only need to be just over the 50% mark to be a tzaddik. In the sense, not the tzaddik in the sense that you're perfect. The tzaddik in the sense that you're basically in Olam Haba. The Rambam talks about that in the Hilchos Teshuvah. You know, once you're there, you're there. However, you're not there totally. You can be a tzaddik and you can earn the next world, but you've got a way to go. You're 51%, you could have been 98%. Okay? So therefore the tzaddikim are the only ones who merited in the sense of the people who were Rashaim. They just didn't meet the bar, that's it. They just didn't even get to the next stage. Disqualified, you know? But the tzaddikim, they can do an awful lot with that. Yeah? But that's a good question. I think that's the answer to your question. Yeah?
So the Rashaim, I think, will not have a second chance to do tshuva.
No, that's it. This world is the world where you can do tshuva. Tshuva is your second chance in this world.
So they die.
That's it.
Never again.
Well, what's this world for? This world, you can do tshuva any time. You can do tshuva.
No, but even the person dies without doing tshuva. So
that's it. That's it. That's why this world is important. You know, bok it off. There's no second test, you know. That's what I think, just educationally. You know, I'm constantly faced with this as an educational challenge with the younger students, where they're, you know, I teach at seminaries where there are tests and things like that. So people come to me, you know, on the day of the test, I didn't revise. Can I do the test next week? Or they come to me after the test, I didn't do very well. Can I do another test to get extra credit? And on the one hand, you want to help them. On the other hand, there's an incredibly negative educational message being given to them if you do help them. And you're basically telling them, don't worry, because even if you didn't bother, there's always another chance. And that's an incredibly, like, dangerous message, because on the one hand it's true, in this world we live in a world where the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to do tshuva, allows us to turn over a new leaf, but there comes a point when there is a final moment, and that's it. If you didn't pass, you failed. You have to be prepared to accept the reality of failure. Only the acceptance of the reality, the frightening reality of failure, will actually make one take the reality of success, I think, meaningfully. And that's why this idea that, you know, something, I'll do a deal with God, I don't know, somehow or other, God will understand.
But how can you really instill that in someone until they get to that moment?
What moment?
The reality that, like, when it's over.
Okay, fine, you're right. That's why it says, Oy lanu liyom ha-misa. You know, how frightening is the moment of death? Because that's when the reality really hits.
Right.
You know, and that's very scary. Yeah. And in the world of Musa, you know, people don't relate well to that today, because you're saying, oh, Rabbi, you're scaring me, and it's not nice, and you're being, you know, harsh, and you're being nasty. And look, there comes a point when we believe in Midas Hadin. Midas Hadin means that when you die, that's it. People left in this world can still do things which influence. That's because they're in this world. But the Midas HaChesed, the Midas HaRachamim, is that until it's over, it's not over. You can do tshuva the last minute before you die, and you can bring everything back. On the other hand, you can regret every mitzvah you ever did the moment before you die, and then everything you did is worthless. That's also very scary. So in other words, there's a reality to it, and that's why I feel that at a certain point, people have to fail. They have to understand what it feels like to fail. I have a sneaking, I'm not a psychologist, I have a sneaking suspicion that one of the reasons why people don't cope well with failure is because they haven't learned to cope with failure. Because if we never let them fail, they don't understand what it feels like to fail, pick yourself up and get on with it again. You know? Anyway, that's maybe I'm just English, you know? But I think I was brought up at school to understand if you fail, you failed. And
yeah.
You didn't get another
in
chance.
America today, it's like everything's equal, you don't play with losers, you don't want people to feel that they're failing.
Right, and then that's why when you get a job and eventually your boss doesn't tolerate failure,
right,
and he throws you out, then you're depressed, then you're on medication, and it's like, because you didn't. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm not here to psychoanalyze the entire world, and I'm not capable of doing it. But I'm just thinking that, at least from a Jewish perspective, this is very serious. Now, look at F. I've summarized for you, before we get to number 17, look at summary 1 and summary 2. I brought you two models. The destiny of the world, for the Rambam, is this world. Then naturally Muslim Mashiach, then temporary resurrection, before, during, or after Mashiach, we'll read 17 in a minute, and then spiritual Olam Haba. The Ramban says this world, followed by a supernatural Muslim Mashiach, followed by an eternal resurrection, which is physical and spiritual together, where the physical and the spiritual constantly, you know, purify each other. That's the destiny of the world. The path of the individual soul mirrors that. For the Rambam, it's life, then death, then the soul world, temporary resurrection, then death, and then the soul world again forever. And the Ramban says it's life, then death, then the soul world, and then eternal resurrection, Olam Haba. Hopefully that diagrammatically sets it out more clearly.
Thank you for doing that.
No problem. 17, I hope it's correct, I think it's correct. 17 is a fascinating source of the Ramban that people don't know about. He says, I said that the Mashiach would not be required to do wonders like miraculously splitting the Red Sea or resurrecting the dead. This is also something people got at him of. He said that Mashiach doesn't have to resurrect the dead, and everyone, you don't believe in the resurrection of the dead. And he said, no. He said, but from this analysis, it doesn't follow that God will not revive the dead by his will and wish when he desires and whomever he desires to resurrect. It will happen in the lifetime of Mashiach, or before him, or after he dies. Really fascinating. The Rambam disconnects Tchias HaMetim completely from Mashiach. Mashiach could Tchias HaMetim happen before Mashiach. The dead can come back to life before Mashiach, and then Mashiach comes. That's one of the sources, by the way, for the Chabad. For the Chabad people that say that the Rebbe will come back to life and then be the Mashiach.
Well,
you can base it on this Rambam completely. I'm not saying that that's true in the sense that that's what everybody believes, but I'm saying it's not without source. It's not ridiculous.
Well, then that contradicts his
Ikar
on the Mashiach.
Why? Oh, so you're going to ask me, how can you have a natural Mashiach when you have a supernatural Tchias HaMetim first? That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question. You could answer that miracles occur as part of the natural system. In other words, there are miracles that have occurred in the past. Okay? That doesn't mean that the world is now miraculous. It means that certain things happen. You also have to define what a miracle is. A miracle isn't necessarily something which is entirely supernatural, which will bring us to the next stage of the discussion, which is, could Tchiyas HaMetim actually be natural, not supernatural, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the Rambam does understand it to be miraculous. Have a look at number 8. He says, 18, excuse me. He says, the resurrection, however, is a miraculous event. The Rambam does say that. Its sense is easily grasped, and nothing more is needed than to believe in it, as an authentic tradition teaches us. It is something outside the nature of existence, and no rational proof that it exists, because you can't rationally prove something which is supernatural. It simply follows the pattern of all miracles. It is to be accepted, and that is that. However, one second, I did bring you, which I'm not going to read at length, but I did bring you a source on page 5 and 6, a secondary source, which I don't normally bring secondary sources, but it's from a book by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, one second, called Immortality, Resurrection, and the Age of the Universe. I thoroughly recommend everything that Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan wrote. As I mentioned to someone at the beginning of the class, had you been at Midrash Rachel or something of a similar nature 25 years ago, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan would have been in your under your arm as you walked around the room all day long. It would have been the thing that you read, the thing that people who were Balei Tshuva, who were reconnecting with Judaism, read in the 80s. There you are, you see Waters of Eden.
What?
Yeah, Ildi has one right here.
Secondary,
in the sense that he's not a primary Torah source, but he's for sure not a secular source. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan was a very big Talmud Chacham who lived in the. He died very young, in his 40s, I believe, in the 1980s. It was very shocking for people that he was taken so suddenly from the world, because he was making a massive impact on the world. He was not only a massive Talmud Chacham, he was an unbelievable Kabbalist. And he had the ability to communicate very complex ideas in very straightforward English. You only need to read his books and look at the footnotes to see the unbelievable bekiyut, the unbelievable breadth of knowledge that he had that lay behind his very straightforward English statements. He wrote many, many books, many of which were brought out after he died. You can buy an anthology now, the Aryeh Kaplan Anthology, with all his books there. Many of them are very short books. 50 page books about basic issues, and he wrote a very good book called The Handbook of Jewish Thought. He wrote many very good books. If you were to read all of his books from beginning to end, you would be very knowledgeable. If you were to read all of his books from beginning to end and learn all the source notes, you'd be a big Talmud Chacham. Okay, fine. So, and they're all in English. Halavai, I wish we were. There are other secondary sources. Now, nowadays, and I'm not mocking it, I'm not criticizing it, but nowadays, in the 25 years, there are other people who've written books that people, you know what it's like, people go with the rabbis that live today. People read Rabbi Tatz. Everyone reads Rabbi Tatz, and it's fantastic stuff. I'm not in any way diminishing what goes on today, but I'm just saying that people forget about people that lived 30 years ago. You know, when my daughter talks about like the last life, she talks about the 1980s. She says it's like her expression. She says it's like something from the 1980s. Like the 1980s for her means like the 14th century. So that's the thing. Once you're already born after, was anyone in this? People in this world were born in the 1980s. Just about. Well, you don't remember the 1980s, okay?
No.
No, you don't.
No. 1980s.
Yeah.
Right.
You were. Anyway, we digress. Rav Aryeh Kaplan in the 19. Rav Aryeh Kaplan in the 1980s and 70s. This is written in the 70s. Wrote this book, and he wrote a thesis here on resurrection. Listen, and he suggests here, you can read it for yourself, but he suggests the following. He was a physicist, by the way. You can look him up on YouTube. There was an interview they did there's a famous American program, was it like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes? Something like that. I don't know. It was something like that. I think it was that one, or it was something very similar, or the something show. There's famous people who interview people.
Barbara Walters.
No, it was the man who interviewed him. Whatever. He's a physicist. He's a scientist.
Brilliant.
Okay, brilliant physicist. He says the following. Look, how can we clone? How can we resurrect people? Maybe by cloning. We can take their DNA. And through the process of cloning, we can reintroduce their DNA into other human cells, and then we can resurrect them. And the supernatural part will be HaKadosh Baruch Hu putting the neshama back into this resurrected person. And he goes through a whole analysis, not just as a theory, but he brings sources to the idea that the first step of Tchias HaMetim has to be human-induced, the natural bit, and only afterwards will you end up with the soul going in. And he goes further, and he says that actually, even if people have been dead for thousands of years, all you need is a bit of DNA in order to do the cloning. By the way, this was science fiction at the time when he wrote this. Today, it's not science fiction. And he goes even one step further, and he says, and actually, you don't even need the DNA. All you need is the genome sequence. All you need is the numerical genome sequence, and if you have the sequence, you can recreate the DNA.
You can do that by preserving the body.
And he says, and therefore, how are you going to get the genome sequencing? Says Eliyahu Navi. That's what you need a Navi for. Eliyahu Navi is a Navi. He can tell you the genome sequence for every human being that ever lived. Once you plug that in to a supercomputer, you're up, you're there. It's an amazing thing. If someone came up with that today, you'd say, oh, you know, whatever. But today, like 40 years ago, it was very interesting. I'm not telling you that this is the only way or the way to understand or even a way to understand Tchias HaMetim, but that's his suggestion. And it's fascinating. I suggest you read it in your own time. I brought you 5 or 6 pages from it, and you can go away and buy the book, which is well worthwhile, and learn what he has to say about that and everything else. Fine. The last point I want to make in the last 5 minutes of the shiur, and by the way, of the course as well, sorry to say that, but there we are, is reincarnation. Let me just say a word about reincarnation. I haven't even mentioned the concept of Gilgulim so far. Gilgulim is a Jewish concept where people come back to life in new bodies. Okay? Is that a Jewish concept or not? So I want to bring you 2 sources. One is number 19, which is the Derech Hashem. The Derech Hashem, of course, is a Kabbalistic source by Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who was a major Kabbalist of the 1700s, 18th century thinker in Italy. He says, Oid Shorish Acher, number 19, Nimsa Lahanhaga Be'inyeni Ha'olam Hazeh. There is another, if you like, principle of the way that this world is governed. V'hushe HaChochma Elyona Sidra laharbois oid had sala kemoshi kasavne, that the great chokhmah on high of a god has found other ways to help and save people. Shenashama achas tavola olamazeh, that one soul can come to this world, pa'amim shonot, many times, but gufim shonim, in many bodies. Va'alidezeh hine tucha letakin bepa'am achas, it can rectify in one particular, if you like, gilgul, in one, what's the word, reincarnate, one incarnation, et asher kilkula b'pam acheres, that which is messed up in previous incarnations. Oyla hashlim, or it can perfect, mashelo hishlima, what it didn't perfect previously. Ulam besof kol gilgulim, and at the end of all of these incarnations, ladin shala asib lavo, the eventual judgments at the very end of days, there'll be a judgment on everything that passed, all the bodies and all the incarnations will all be judged together. In other words, you get it's an amazing chesed. Not like I said before, which is like death is the end. The chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually goes beyond that. And the truth is, there are other things. There's a concept of Gehenim, which means that even after you die, there may be a purification process that a person can be, if you like, elevated somehow through that without going through what that is. And Gilgulim, according to the Ramchal, is saying that there's a chesed that even if you messed up this life, you can be brought back in a new life, and then again in a new life, and a new life, and a new life, etc. And eventually, at the end, you will be judged for all of those Gilgulim together. It is important to add that in the world of the Kabbalists, in the Arizal, the Shara Gilgulim, etc., Rav Chaim Vital, this is very fundamental Jewish thinking. However, in the world of the rationalist Rishonim, this does not appear. And therefore, when we're learning the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim, the Rambam does not subscribe to this concept of Gilgulim. He says, as far as I'm aware, he doesn't mention it. And there are others of his era, mainstream Jewish thinkers, that actually mention it only to dismiss it. Look in number 20 to get you a full picture. Hineni Omer Ki Anashim. There are men. There are people. This is Rav Saad Yigon, who lived about 150 years before the Rambam. Maybe 200 years before the Rambam. Ki Anashim Mimisha Nikram Yehudim. There are people who call themselves Jews. Okay? Matzati Ma'aminim Begilgul. They believe in this thing called Gilgul. Bekarim Oysa Ha'it Ha'i Atkut. Okay? V'inyano L'da'atam. According to their view, Ruach Reuven tiyeh b'Shimon, the spirit of Reuven can come back in Shimon. V'achakach b'Levi, and then he can come back in Levi. V'achakach b'Yehuda, and then he can come back in Yehuda. U'mehem or Rovam, Sovrim, sheyesh tiyeh ruach Adam b'Behema. Maybe you can even come back to life in an animal. V'ruach b'Behema b'Adam, or an animal in a person. U'divarim rabbi min ha'azayis halalu v'adul bulim. And all manner of such nonsense. And he goes on to say that this is the reason why they made such a mistake, and it's not Jewish, it's a non-Jewish understanding, and he rejects it completely. The world we live in today is a very Kabbalistic world, and perhaps this is a point at which, if you like, to make a final comment on the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Yes, we believe and we follow the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and every Jewish kid will be able to tell you, yes, Ani Ma'amin, Ani Ma'amin, we follow the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim. But today, we look at these theological and philosophical issues very often through a prism of the Kabbalah, through a prism of Jewish mysticism. And there's no question, if you were to ask someone today, are Gilgulim mainstream Jewish thinking today? Is reincarnation a mainstream Jewish approach? The answer to that clearly is yes. Clearly is yes. And therefore, even though the Rambam and maybe others like him did not subscribe to that, today, for example, I brought you the last source, the Mishnah Berurah. He talks about the idea that even in halacha, are you allowed to, if you like, there's a principle in Hilchos Yom Kippur. He talks about it, and also in Loeg Larash, you're not allowed to do mitzvahs next to the grave of a dead, obviously grave of a dead person. You're not allowed to do mitzvahs next to a grave. Why? Because it's an insult to the grave, it's the dead person, because they can't do mitzvahs and you're acting in a way in front of the grave. It's obviously nothing to do with the dead person.
You can do it in their merit?
Yeah, you can do it in their merit. But just to do a mitzvah, it's obviously nothing to do with the dead person. They're dead, they don't know what you're doing. But you should feel that it's a growth in sensitivity. It's like, you know, going in front of a disabled person and running or jumping on the pole. Like, it's very insensitive to do that in front of someone. Mm-hmm. So he asked, can you do mitzvahs in front of the grave of a child? The child was never chayv in mitzvahs. So what's the difference? And he says, no, because it may be a Gilgul of someone who was, etc. So even in Halacha, Gilgulim comes into things, clearly. And therefore, I think we live in a world which does subscribe to that today, but the Rambam clearly didn't. A couple of points, then we'll wrap up. Yeah.
How do they reconcile the unmaking and Gilgulim?
Well, no, there's no problem, because Gilgulim, you ask which body you're going to come back in.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question. And like the Rambam says, don't give yourself a headache about these things, because we don't know exactly how they're going to work. But that's a good question. Which body will you come back in? Great question.
No,
Rav Saad Yigon is not the Gaon of Vilna. Rav Saad Yigon is one of the Gaonim. He's one of the period of Jewish leaders from around the 8th to the 11th century. He lived in Egypt in the 10th century. The Vilna Gaon lived in the 18th century. Yes.
So it's not like a living for 120 years thing. It's not like a new concept when people like go along with your Gilgulim, or is that?
No, I don't think it's to do with it. Moshe Rabbeinu lived to 120. That's the definition of like a full and meaningful life. So we say, you know, Mayav Esrim. We just say that to give people a bracha.
A little bit more literally sometimes than that.
I don't know if they really do. Most people do not live to 120.
Right.
In fact, nobody lives to 120. So even when they give you a bracha, Meva Esrim, it's just a nice way of saying, I hope you have a long and meaningful life. It doesn't really mean that you're going to live to 120. I mean, there are people who are, you know, who are alive, who are 119, 117, whatever. It's like, what do you say to someone on his 120th birthday? Like, have a nice day, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
The idea of Gilgulim is like really beautiful, that like Hashem would have that much mercy to let us keep coming back till we get it right. But it also doesn't it allow for us to mess up his feelings?
That's the Chofetz Chaim in Hilchos Yom Kippur. He says in Hilchos Yom Kippur, don't turn around on Yom Kippur and say to yourself, you know something, I'm not going to do tshuva. It's too hard, because there's always another chance. I can always come back at the Gilgal. I can always fix it next time. He says, because you have no idea the kind of tsoros that you have to go through to die and come back to life again. He says, it's not a straightforward business. And he goes for the lengthy piece in Hilchos Yom Kippur. Says that the agony of having to die and come back as a Gilgal, it's better to do tshuva. It's easier to do tshuva, and it's definitely worth it to do tshuva. So if you like, get in early to avoid disappointment. So he addresses that comment head on there in Hilchos Yom Kippur. The stress of dying is meant to be perhaps the most stressful thing a person can ever do. Yeah.
How come the Rambam's view on the Shemitah and the Tzfat Pasuk is really
accepted? You mean on Gilgulim or Tzfat Pasuk? No, I think in the end in Tzfat Pasuk the Rambam pretty much came up and said. He said that. Oh, you mean when he comes in terms of Mashiach? Okay, so that's a big question on the whole thing. I can't take anyone over now. It's at the end. We can talk about it afterwards. But the Rambam, most people who follow the Rambam's Gilgul Ikrim either don't know what the Rambam actually said, or if they did, they never believed that he said it like that. So the purpose of this course has been to educate us as to what the Rambam actually said, not just what people think he did, and to really help us to understand these principles in a deeper and more meaningful way.